Buckle up for sass, murder mysteries, and questionable dance routines, all wrapped up in a gloriously 90s package. No More Late Fees is back for season 4, and we're diving headfirst into the dark comedy cult classic Drop Dead Gorgeous. Welcome to the No More Late Fees podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Jackie. And we're just two best friends and ex-Blockbuster employees rewatching some of the best and worst movies from the late 90s and early 2000s. This week, we are talking about the 1999 dark comedy Drop Dead Gorgeous with our guest, actor and singer, Carrie Francis. Welcome, Carrie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
We're
so
psyched.
Happy to have you.
Yeah.
So if you want to get to know Carrie a little better, check out the bonus episode with her dropping later this week. But before we dive into the movie, let's get into some
housekeeping.
If you love the podcast and you want to support us, here are a few ways that you can.
Did you know writing a review and or rating us helps us get more listeners? If you want to be featured and help us grow, make sure you head to Apple, Spotify, Podchasers, or your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review.
And if you like what you hear and want to buy us a virtual cup of coffee, head on over to ko-fi.com/nomorelatefees.
And super exciting news, finally, season four, we have launched our No More Late Fees website. Woo-hoo. So you can go check out everything about us, see our merch, all the fun stuff at nomorelatefeespodcast.com. That is nomorelatefeespodcast.com.
Let's hop into Drop Dead Gorgeous. An annual beauty pageant in small town Minnesota turns ridiculously competitive and ultimately chaotic in this biting comedy. Amber Atkins, the daughter of hard-drinking Mom Annette, and Becky Lehman, who is motivated by her former beauty queen mother Gladys, are among the top contenders in the event. As Amber, Becky, and other local girls prepare for the big day, bizarre incidents occur leading up to an ending with a bang. It stars Kirstie Alley, Ellen Barkin, Kirsten Dunst, Denise Richards, Brittany Murphy, Amy Adams, and Allison Janney. It is directed by Michael Patrick Jan and written by Lona Williams. And you can watch it on DVD. You have to have that physical media for this one. But before we get started, let's get into our ratings rewind.
You know the drill. Before we get into the movie, we will reveal the rating our Y2K selves would give. Then at the end, we'll see if our current selves agree with our initial rating. Our scale consists of would buy it again,
the best, would play on repeat,
5-day rental,
would watch again,
2-day rental,
okay, but nothing to write home about,
same day rental,
trash, much like a burnt up swan float. It's trash.
I was hoping you were going to talk about this burnt up swan. All right, we're going to start with you, Carrie. What was your Y2K rating or your younger self version rating of this movie?
My Y2K version would say 5-day rental. I think this would have been something I was obsessed with, especially because of how many girls were in it, and thinking, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be in movies too. Anything that had, like, you know, a lot of girl teenagers, I feel like I probably would have wanted to have it the whole week and rewatch it a lot.
Yes. Jackie?
I never watched this movie as a Y2K what? Jackie. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't know why I thought we saw this one together. Okay. Younger Danielle thought this was a 5-day rental. Because I did not buy it. I do remember that. But let's start with the budget. So this movie had a budget of $15 million. And it only made $10.5 million. I say only because it didn't make its money back fully. Mm-hmm. Entertainment Weekly gave it a D, calling it graceless. While Lil Raj said, sometimes I wonder how anyone could have thought a screenplay was funny enough to film. Mm. Damn, Lil Raj. Sometimes he's, you need to take me to the hospital for these third degree burns to be thrown out. It's a lot.
always with the honesty. Right. He doesn't mince words.
So this movie obviously had its 20-year anniversary, and I think it was E! News had an article, and it said, but even before the harsh reviews and disappointing numbers, this movie wasn't exactly smooth sailing on the set, with clashes going down between the young writer and director and one of the stars exhibiting some diva tendencies. Now, before, I don't know if you guys saw all the notes, but who do you think was the diva?
And it was one of the
It was just one of the actors.
A star. I just hope it's not Allison Janney. That's my one hope.
It wasn't. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it might have been Denise.
I thought so at first. I don't know why I overlooked who it actually was, but it was Katie Alley.
Oh, I was gonna guess her.
Yeah, it was.
She has to get permission from Scientology for like everything.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get into that, but yeah, it was a lot of clashing happening on this set. Before we dive into the casting, let's hear a word from one of our pod pals.
Welcome to Bitch Watch.
Hi, I'm Sly.
I'm Witsy.
And we're two bitches watching TV.
We're a recap and shit talk show.
That's right. We watch hours and hours and hours of TV, so you don't have to.
You can listen and laugh along with us everywhere you listen to podcasts and find us on Instagram and Twitter at Bitch Watch Pod.
Is our show original? No.
Entertaining? We hope so. This is Bitch Watch.
Anywho, so we know we got Ellen Birkin in this movie and Allison Janney, but we could have had potentially Goldie Hawn and Sigourney Weaver.
Mm.
That would have been epic, I think. But I still love who we got instead.
Yeah.
In Knives Out, Sigourney Weaver was actually supposed to play Jamie Lee's role, which is very interesting. It would have been a completely different thing. And just like this movie, it would have been a completely different. I can't imagine Goldie Hawn and Sigourney Weaver in those roles.
It would have been hilarious. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But also Sigourney Weaver, I now do, because of that movie You Again, it's funny that because her and Jamie Lee played, you know, competitive ex-friends or whatever. So I do think of them together because of that movie.
Great movie.
Who else do we have? We have Sarah Michelle Gellar. She auditioned for the role of Becky Lehman. I think she would have been great in it. Yeah, I really think she would have been really good. But I think Denise Richards just did really, she was just so stone cold about it. Like, as if nothing was really bothering her, but she was still scary as hell in a weird way. I think she killed the role. Who else did we get, Jackie?
And we have Melissa Joan Hart audition for the role of Amber Atkins, played by Kirsten Dunst.
It's so crazy how many movies we've been doing that we saw, we've seen that Melissa Joan Hart was thought of to be in them. And the movies are just like so not what her persona was at that time, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I can see her visually doing it, but it would have been a completely different take on the role of Amber versus Kirsten being so natural and easy with everything. I feel like Melissa's acting is more comedic and upfront and kind of more in your face. And that serves her so well in so many roles, but that's wild. I guess I never realized they would cross over. For some reason, I've divided them up into different timelines, but it makes sense now. Obviously, Melissa and Kirsten probably went in for tons of the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Melissa might be a little bit older, but I think that's also really cool about Kirsten Dunst is that she was really playing a teenager, and a lot of the sets that she was on, everybody else was older. Cause like Denise was 29 years old.
No way.
Yes.
In this movie, she was 29.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's wild.
It is, but she looks, I believe that she was that young, or, you know, at least in her early 20s.
Never. If you had asked me how old did I think she was in this movie, I would have said like maybe 19.
Yeah.
Never when I was at 29. That's awesome. That's a great fact.
And it's funny that you said that, like, Kirsten had, you know, such a sweet demeanor, like just the way she would have played it. The director sold him on her, was she was on Celebrity Teen Jeopardy. And he just felt like, wow, she's so sweet. She's normal. She looks like the kind of girl that could go grab a microphone out of a dead reporter's hand and joyfully keep reporting, but not feel like there was an evil intent behind it, you know, or premeditation. So I thought that was really interesting, because it's true. Like, when she does, well, when we get to that part, I have some, thoughts. Yeah. But I could see where he was coming from with that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Who else was just like super sad to see Brittany Murphy in this?
I know. And the manic character that she plays is just, it's so up her alley. And it felt natural. It didn't feel like forced. Like, that could easily go into like overacting. And like, it just was like, okay, this girl was just like so in unease the entire movie, that like she doesn't know, she's laughing to keep from crying almost, it felt like, the entire time.
Yes. Yeah, when she was doing the bit where she was showing pictures of her brother, I was like, this is the most natural. It felt like you're just actually watching a real person showing pictures of her brother. She has such a natural way about her.
What I love about Brittany Murphy is that I think there's a lot of movies or actors where you, on paper, you look at the movie and you say, oh, this is going to be this actor's shining role. This is going to be, they're going to like be the star. And then out of like a dark horse, here comes somebody else. Like Brittany Murphy she just looked like light was shining right outside of her body. Mm. Like, when you think about Clueless, Alicia Silverstone and Stacey Dash, they had it, right? But you're looking at Brittany Murphy, and she is eating up when she's on, like, she is not fading into the black. Even when she's playing, like, a very just quirky character, she shines every time. I felt the same way when Angelina Jolie was in Girl Interrupted. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone thought, this is Winona's like vehicle. I don't think anybody saw Angelina kind of coming. And Brittany Murphy in that movie too was just like eating up. It becomes like, this is a feast for the audience because the acting talent, but that's just how I feel about anything that she's in, no matter which star is in it. She just something about her that I don't really see a whole lot now, but I like don't know this woman, but I miss her, you know, like it just saddens me. I just imagine where her career would have been if she was still here. It's just so heartbreaking. I can't. I miss you, Britt. I miss you.
And I was like, at the talent portion, I was like, they can't let Brittany sing because there's no way she doesn't win if she gets to that part. And so I was like, oh, she doesn't do her talent. Okay, that makes sense now. Because I'm like, there's no way she doesn't win. Like, she can run circles around everyone on the stage when it comes to singing. So
yeah, that's true. I just think a happy feet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, the only thing that I knew about this movie going into it, which was not much really. I don't remember even seeing it when I was young, but that it wasn't it Amy Adams' first movie?
Yes, it is.
Yes, and she crushes it.
Oh my gosh. Like, you would have never guessed that this was her first movie based on this performance.
And it's
no, she was fantastic.
All right, I think we can jump into the movie.
So Drop Dead Gorgeous opens up with some title cards that say 1995 marked the 50th anniversary of the nation's oldest beauty pageant, the Sarah Rose Cosmetics American Teen Princess Pageant. And so,
go ahead. Sorry. It gave Mary Kay vibes, was that?
Oh, 100%. That's what I'm assuming.
That's a great comparison.
That's all I kept thinking about.
And then because it is the 50th anniversary, there's this documentary crew that is following contestants at a town level through the process of making the state. The state of Minnesota represent the state of Minnesota. Why did they choose this teeny tiny town? Is my question.
That is a good question. Well, I don't know.
This pageant seems like it's a huge deal. Like it's
across
the
state.
Like across the nation. Like, why choose the tiniest town in Minnesota to start this documentary? Yeah, it felt like an odd choice to me.
Well, I wonder if they were maybe they had different teams in different locations following the whole thing, and they were going to put it together.
That's a good idea.
I just like to make up fake backstories. I don't know.
She does. And then we get Adam West is the host of this pageant. It always reminds me of William Shatner and Miss Congeniality. Like,
which one came out first?
This one.
Interesting. Because I feel a lot of similarities in some, not a lot, but enough that I was like, okay.
So we see that Kiersey Alley plays Gladys, the local chair. They head to the Mall of America to buy the outfits for the performance. And she's like, the theme is, I wrote it down, proud to be an American. Every single theme that she miraculously comes up with, because she's so creative, is U.S. themed every single year.
My favorite was America. I can or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that they talk about the Mall of Americas, but they're actually at a different mall. They are at the mall that Mallrats was filmed at.
It felt familiar.
Which I absolutely love that for us, because we love Mallrats here.
I do.
I will admit, I have never seen Mallrats.
Really? Have you seen Clerks?
Put it on the list. I'll have to let you know. Stay tuned.
Definitely.
Oh, the mall was called Eden Prairie Center that they were actually filming at. And Gladys steals a handicap spot.
From a
cripple, quote unquote, she says.
So she says cripple, and then the R word is thrown around so much, and I was just like cringing. I used to be a special education teacher, so like even more so, I was just like, oh my god, please stop using that word.
It was pretty bad.
But I feel like that is kind of middle America in some location, like some regions, like they probably still talk like that in it. Like,
I don't know. I want to give them more credit with the internet, that maybe they don't do that as much now.
I don't know. I've met some people.
Very generous. You know, in a way, you almost just answered the question you just had earlier, like, why would they pick this tiny town, right? Probably because then they could get away with doing all sorts of crazy things in the script, and we would just say what we're saying.
That's true.
Well, it's a tiny town in the middle of nowhere, and these people, that's just how they are. So maybe that was a really intentional move on their part, so they could have characters like this.
Definitely. Oh, well, also the writer herself, she wrote this from her own experience. Ooh. And because she was a contestant in a local beauty pageant, and she appears in the film as one of the third non-speaking judges. So that's a cool little shout out for her. But she's coming from her own perspective. And I want to say where they shot it, actually, I was going to say it was the director's hometown, but I don't think that's right. So
we cut that. Sorry. Where did they film it?
They filmed it throughout Carver County area, mainly in Waconia, Minnesota. Although the names of the real Minnesota communities that were shown on the sashes of contestants later in the movie. Did I say that right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's really interesting. I didn't know that they actually filmed it in Minnesota with their Minnesota accents that they had.
It's super cute because there's like a website in a Minnesotan website where they like talk about the film and where it was, you know, different places that it was shot in. So I thought that was they're very proud of it.
Oh, well, at least they're embracing it with
Yeah.
those over the top Minnesota accents that happen in this movie.
It reminded me of, have you guys seen New in Town? Where
Yes,
they
I
vamp, or where
love that movie,
every
Tapioca.
time the accents, yes, came out in this movie, I was like, oh, I should watch New in Town. Like that was like this kept happening in my brain because those are the two movies that stand out with this specific, I guess Fargo probably.
Yeah.
That's what inspired Kirstie Alley's accent was Frances McDormand's Fargo
Oh, in
accent.
Fargo?
Yeah.
Oh
Was
my gosh.
one of the characters in New in Town named Gladys because
Yes.
okay, that's adding up. Maybe Gladys is a very popular name in Minnesota.
Maybe. So we
Oh my
start to
gosh.
meet some of the girls that are competing. We meet Leslie, played by Amy Adams. She's obsessed with her boyfriend and she's a cheerleader, are the main things we need to know about her.
When you meet her, do you like when I was watching this movie, I kept getting Sugar and Spice vibes the whole time, especially her character in her like cheerleading outfit and stuff like that. And I could not figure out why I was getting that. And then I realized, I found out later doing the notes that the screenwriter of this one wrote Sp Sugar and Spice.
Ah, that makes sense.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Because these feel like sister movies, essentially. Like a lot of the things happen similar. So sorry, but it was scratching at my brain when. Continue, sorry.
And so we meet Amber, played by Kirsten Dunst, and it seems like she just has to earn money in different ways to help support her and her alcoholic mom in their double wide. So the first time we see her, she is practicing her tap routine while doing the makeup and hair of dead people at the funeral home.
Seems like a peaceful job.
This is true.
Soothing. I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah.
That's a job that would be tricky. That's some
Especially because
aldehyde.
it's such a small community, you must know everyone you're doing makeup for.
Oh.
Which we do get into later.
We do. That's a heartbreaking scene. We'll get to.
Yes. And then we meet Rebecca. Occasionally, she's also called Becky, played by Denise Richards. Her mom is Gladys. And so she thinks she's got this pageant on lock. Like she has been trained from an early age to do the pageant answers and to sit there and smile. But she is also cutthroat and ruthless. And she's like the president of the Lutheran Sisterhood Gun Club. So she's got an edge. And I love that she says, Jesus loves winners, is like
Oh.
her outlook on life.
Does
And then
he now? That's
I
very
guess so.
interesting. Okay.
And then Lisa, played by Brittany Murphy, she says she's going to sing and dance. That's why I started thinking like there's no one that's going to beat her because it's Brittany Murphy singing. And her brother seems like he's a drag queen and has moved to New York. We know he's moved to New York. He's dressed up as Liza Minnelli. And who is the other one?
Oh, Barbara.
Barbara
Yep.
Streisand.
Because that delivery stayed with me when she said, Barbara. It was like the most perfect delivery on one word.
And then we meet Tess, who loves dogs. And Tess, the line
What?
she says,
What happened to her? So, like, at
I,
first you see her room and there's like all these German Shepherd pictures.
yeah.
But then you hear a really loud bark, which I know they a deep bark, which I know they do it on purpose to kind of trick you, and there's a wiener dog.
Yeah. Well, I think What happened was her German Shepherd attacked her because she said it went to live on a farm with some nice people.
She got the skin from her butt to fill her stomach.
They remade my belly with skin from my butt is the lie.
I don't want to laugh because I know that's somebody's experience, but it was just so random.
And then, Molly, the backstory I hate the most. Adopted by Japanese immigrants to assimilate into the United States, it made me feel icky.
Wild. I, like, you know what it is? So I think the 90s and 2000s just show kind of like a really big, it doesn't pass a litmus test, but it shows you how essentially sometimes, you know, white people did not think of other people's experiences, because their experiences were centered.
Yeah.
So to look at this Japanese family, they never thought like what that perspective might be. They just kind of put their own thoughts on like what that is like.
Which and is then over tried, the top, yay America.
Right. And then tried to make it funny. There would have been an opportunity to make that actually funny from probably a first generation Japanese person who grew up with Japanese parents, because it when you are a child of immigrants, your parents do, like, a lot of them are very pro USA. My parents are Jamaican, but they are very pro USA because of the opportunities they feel about America.
I think I think it could have worked if she had these like immigrant parents, and it was because there was an older sister played by Seiko Matsuda, who is a Japanese superstar, and yeah, she gets reduced to like this tiny role. But if they had just made her like really passionate about pageants and her parents didn't understand, like, I think that could have leaned into a lot of the comedy.
Yeah.
Without being like this really uncomfortable, we adopted a white girl.
I see where they were trying to go. I feel like your version, I think, could have worked a lot better. I think if they just had somebody who had a Japanese experience, would have made it funny. And that's all. Like, it's like the joke didn't hit because they didn't have the experience to pull from. And then it just became you're making fun of somebody.
Yeah.
And missed the mark. So it's unfortunate.
It felt like, as a screenwriter, that she kind of said, what are the extreme family dynamics I could fit? Like, almost like when we see a show today and they're like, how can I make this, you know, quote unquote woke? And it just completely misses every mark possible.
Yeah.
It felt like that. It felt like they were like, okay, rich, privileged family, heavy drinking family, gay character, you know, off to be a drag queen. Yeah. And now we've got an adopted family, but wait, we'll switch it. It won't be the white couple adopted. That's like the line of thought, an effort to sell their movie and make it be like different and interesting and off the wall. And those things are never, ever going to thrive in any film or TV show because one, you're putting other people down. You're mocking other humans who are watching it, who have experiences you do not have and you shouldn't be writing about. But also, it just makes audiences feel like their intelligence isn't really valued. It just feels like a lot of cheap. When we look at all of these families, to me, it looks like someone who felt like they had to take an idea and then crank the dial on every single one. And if they had just done it a tiny bit, like with your ideas you both gave, great. Just a little dial or a little something. Even it would have been relevant if it was, let's say, someone adopted from an Asian community. That would have at least been relevant for the time, right? When we have actual political things going on where girls in different countries needed to be adopted. Okay, then that would have made sense, right? So there could have been so many ways to do these family characters, and it just misses the mark over and over.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have a hardship with writing. Everybody wants to feel like they can write anything. That's what writing is. Mm-hmm. Like, you should be able to write anything. The problem is that a lot of people miss that opportunity of educating themselves. When you have blind spots because you're ignorant, essentially, because you're not realizing the world around you, I think that's when people miss the mark. That's when you can't write for everybody, because you need to at least have the understanding that this is not just be like an imagination thing. This is happening in real life to somebody, and like, I need to ask for help. Yeah, essentially.
Like, just ask the questions, go and like interview people, have people read your scripts that are from those communities and receive their feedback and adjust where needed. Like, instead of just, we're going to throw all of this stuff and not really take the time to research and make sure that we're not insulting anyone.
Also, I think, I wonder how much of the script was touched by producers, because the writer, like I said earlier, there was a lot of tension between her and the director, but there was a lot of tension between her and the producers as well, giving feedback on things, making her change things. So I just wonder, like, what other things might have been touched or added. So that's why she left Sugar and, like, her name's not even on Sugar and Spice, because so many people changed the script and changed her vision. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we also have to factor in really being a female screenwriter at that time was even harder, right, than it is now to break through different doors. And I can imagine wanting something so badly that you do make these choices that maybe are not the best choices long-term, but the best choices that got her these meetings were probably these wild, ridiculous, over-the-top things that we are now dissecting. So I think it's fair to have a little bit of grace on that side too, that maybe all of these issues with the producers and the director, wasn't there something with the director who later was like, I could have maybe been nicer?
He said that she didn't have the best experience on set, often clashing with the first time director, Michael Patrick Jan. She said, I just found Jan to be a bit of an asshole. I remember going out in the rain, crying, going to my rental car, like having a full body cry because I felt like, oh my God, this could get away and not turn out the way I see it. There were a couple of things like that. And then I pulled myself together. I really didn't favor him. Jan, who would never direct another feature film, admitted, I think I probably could have been nicer. As a 26-year-old, I was probably a little more like, no, we're fucking doing it this way. What are you talking about? I was maybe a tiny bit insensitive at that time in my life.
Oh, 26. Well, your frontal cortex is not fully developed at 26. Sir, what are you doing directing a movie, also directing a movie about women's experiences? Like, it just doesn't make, I wonder how he got this job, and is he still directing? Is she still writing?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if she's still writing. I mean, I don't know what else. I can look that up. But yes, he definitely has been directing more things, but mainly like TV.
And where did we get this job, Michael Patrick? Was this perhaps a family friend or like a parental was he a nepo baby before
it
nepo
has to be were, has to be
like 26
yeah
something
I mean maybe on. Not maybe it was just like went to a
typically like in the 90s it was typical to have some really like young directors, but those were like the indie movies where they wrote and directed the whole thing and like funded the whole piece, not like, oh, this girl wrote this thing that I'm now going to direct. And I want to be like, okay, good growth, but he's like, I could have maybe been nicer. Like, it's not like, no, you should take accountability for your actions if like you're making the writer cry and like yelling at her. Be like, no, I was a jerk and she didn't deserve that. And it doesn't matter what age I was. I could have just been a nice person.
Well, you know.
Or grown.
Yeah.
It looks like, update, he did just direct a movie called Oregon Or oh, sorry, not Oregon. Oregon Trail.
Oh, like
it's a
your
horror
organs?
movie. Yeah.
Ah.
But he did
dear
direct.
Hard pass.
He directed Reno 911, Reno 911 Miami, Let's Go to Prison, and some other
right
productions.
Okay. Well, you know what? We don't know him now, and we don't know her now, and we have to just imagine they were doing the best they could with a really unique, that was supposed to be chaotic and all over the place, that probably created a chaotic environment. And if a 26-year-old was at the helm, everything trickles down. So if he didn't have the ability to really set the tone for that set, it's also odd that the writer was there. Unless you're the writer director, a lot of the times the writer, once that script is locked, is not necessarily on set or involved with producers or involved moving forward. So maybe it sounds like maybe she wanted to direct it. Maybe she wanted to produce it. Maybe. And we don't know, you know, we'll never really, unless we deep dive on her, we'll never really know what it was. And that could be problematic if you wanted to secretly direct it and this young man is telling you what's what about the story you created. I would also be crying.
Yeah, that's true. Random fact for myself, he is married to one of my soap stars from General Hospital, Lisa Low. I don't want to say her wrong last name wrong, but Low Sierra.
Low Sierra.
Yeah, maybe that's she's Italian, so that's probably right. Didn't see that one coming. I love her. Him not so much right now.
We also meet Molly. Oh no, we already met Molly. We meet Michelle, who's very into theater and being a dramatic actress. And she was choosing between Soylent Green and another monologue.
Othello.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So she loves the drama. Janelle, my girl, doing the sign language. But so at first when she's talking, she is signing. Like, I could understand what she was saying. But then when it gets to that dance, like there was, it was very loose on sign and very heavy on dance and just big, big arms.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
C for effort.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, it was no Mel Kalikimaka circa 1999.
God.
With the signing eagles.
I really can't wait till we do Napoleon Dynamite because there's another signing
happy
situation.
Hamstone.
Yeah.
That was me. And then we get Tammy, who seems like she's just down on the farm. She's good at everything. She has her Letterman jacket and all her patches, and she just likes to drive the
tractor.
Huller.
Huller?
I think that's what they called it. And soon after we meet Tammy, she blew herself up on the Huller. And so.
Or
sorry,
did
Tammy.
She?
Yeah. Dun dun
dun dun dun. When she came on the screen, I was like, I didn't remember a lot about this movie, but I said, I don't remember this girl. I don't have any resonance. And then immediately she was killed. And I thought, well, that's why. It was like a real time. I made myself laugh out loud. You know, it was a real time moment for me.
She did. That's why.
Bye, Tammy.
Because Tammy had to die. Na, 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 na.
We then hop on over to the anorexia and bulimia wing of the hospital to meet last year's winner, Mary.
Played by Amanda Detmer. And this is her first feature film debut, her film debut. I forgot she was in this one as well.
I did too. And I think she did a really good job of not going overboard with the role. Because it was that
it's
role,
rough.
I think, was very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt like it was... She did well in the role that was given to her. Did I wish this role had been written? No, but
I think, yeah, everything. I know
it's
everything had to
thing.
Be larger than life situation. And it's a theme that fits into pageant life because it is very real, especially
absolutely.
Because These girls are doing this particular pageant, but a lot of the girls who do pageants do multiple pageants, and this is their like identity situation going on. So,
Yeah,
I know. So we see Amber, and she's legit at the hospital helping Mary brush her hair and do all of this stuff. Amber has no ounce of pretension or ulterior motives for anything. She is just a kind soul that does things because it's the right thing to do. Whereas Becky walks in and it's all for show, it's all for the cameras. Mary's like, I don't know who you are. And Becky plays it off as like, oh, like she forgets things and like makes her like seem crazy.
and she brings her chocolate, and the girl is anorexic. So, yeah, Becky is, she's trying to please Jesus. She's got to win in the worst ways ever.
Jesus don't like ugly though.
She said Jesus likes a winner. She didn't say how Jesus likes her to get there. I don't know.
The next scene is Amber tip-tapping her way home to the trailer park
Let me just say, this routine on the streets, I've never seen anything like it, but I'm not mad at it. I just was laughing my ass off when she was doing it because Kirsten Dunst does not know how to tap dance. I know someone taught her a few
Basic
little,
steps.
very basic, like what she was doing, the slap, 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 slap. Like that is like what you very first learn. And that's all she had. She a one trick pony with that. That's why they were doing a lot of arm moves to distract you.
I only know the step ball change. That was as far as I got into my tapping career.
We knew I was going places when I could do the buffalo. I killed it.
Look out.
Hey. So this is when we meet her mom. She has a drinking problem and she's just concerned. She's not concerned that there is a whole film crew in Amber's bedroom with the door closed. She's more concerned about if Amber got her smokes or not. This is the dynamic we see between them.
She
But
does
they
care if
do.
Amber is pregnant.
She does. And it is a very loving relationship. It's just priorities. Maybe not where they should be.
She's also a hairdresser, right?
Yes. And her best friend, played by Allison Janney, I forget her.
You're right.
Loretta. Thank you.
Thank you, Loretta, played by Allison Janney, is kind of like a surrogate mother to
Like a godmother.
Amber. Yeah, like she's always been around. She gives her advice. She takes care of her when mom gets injured, all the things. And we do see that Amber has a slight adoration for Diane Sawyer, who also used to do pageants.
I feel like there's another movie where the character is like obsessed with Diane Sawyer, and I cannot figure out which one it is. I was wondering if it was Morning Glory or not, but it might just be this movie.
You're just making things up.
Yeah, it might. I'll let you know if I find out who it is.
Then we meet this creepy guy. I don't even know his name. I just wrote down creepy guy who's always lurking. When they're doing the dance routines, he's lurking. He has a video camera with his VW bus. Like, and then he ends up being a judge. I'm like, this guy needs to be like
In
100 yards
jail.
away from all underage minors.
He's 100% a pedo. I don't know. I don't care what you said. That man had a camera ready.
He kept calling them the young girls. And I'm like, no, I don't like it.
I feel really bad for the actor because he says to this day, he still gets people in real life that will say that he is a pervert
Oh,
and
I hate that for
because of
him.
this role. And he's like, it's not me. Or he'll be like, in a movie, I'm a pervert. So,
Mean, well cast. Really, he did do a good job. I understand the confusion, but that's got to be the worst to play someone like that and then have that follow you your whole life. That's
That's
tough.
rough. Yeah.
Next. Oh, so The next scene is, why can't I think of her name? Becky hitting on a guy who is very interested in Amber. And so he ends up asking Amber out. She accepts. And she says it's really busy at the funeral home right now because it's hunting season. And like the very next scene, it's him on a gurney and she has to do his makeup.
It broke my heart. This scene. This scene just, I really did not remember any of this movie, but I certainly did not remember this part. Mm-hmm. I can imagine my parents not letting me watch this. Like, I don't have any memory of watching this when it came out or any time around when it came out. I must have been a little bit older, but I probably would have cried if I was in the theater watching. Yeah. She just plays that so perfectly, the way that she responds while responding exactly as this girl would have, which is like, oh, well, you know, like,
yeah.
That's she's just her sad, life. Like that's... But
she's used to being disappointed.
Yeah. And it's a perfect setup for what else is happening.
I was just confused for a second because I was like, wait a minute. Did we skip time? Like, how many days is this in the future? This did the same day he's same dead. Day.
And but... then we cut to Becky at the Lutheran Sisterhood shooting range going, oh, well, hunting's dangerous.
She doesn't even care. She's so deadpan. It's not even like a wink wink about it. She just is like, whatever.
I always felt like she was like, kind of like, I did it because he wasn't interested in me is how I took that.
I mean, but it just gave me psychopath vibes, you know? So.
And then Amber gets this picture with, was it Tammy on it? And then on the back, it says, you're next. But it looked like a little kid wrote it.
Well, they were trying to throw her off.
And then she's walking home and her house has burnt down. And she's like, what's going on? She's panicking. She goes to find mom. They go with mom to the hospital and she literally has a beer can like fused to her burnt hand.
I don't even know. Like, I know it's a joke, but third degree burns like that.
Yeah.
There would be, first of all, okay, from a medical standpoint, first of all, I know, again, it's a movie, but they would not let anybody be in that room. She would not be in a regular room. She would be in ICU immediately. She might have had to be moved to a burn unit. They would not have let her, anybody, like, touch that. It would be an excruciating pain.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's supposed to be funny to have a beer can fused into your hand because of a fire from your trailer. But also, there's realistically, that woman would not even be able to talk, nonetheless, berate a candy striper to give her a pack of smokes. Which, by the way, bitch... Why would you want to be smoking right now?
Oh my gosh. And that healing journey, the pacing of her healing journey,
right?
It's like a modern day miracle.
And they have to amputate her arm and she makes do though. She can cut into a beer. Most of it falls on the floor, but she figures it out. It's wild. It's wild.
She's an overcomer. That's the spin. We find that positive. She's an overcomer and she's going to keep going for herself and her daughter and her best friend.
Yeah. And Amber says, I'm quitting. Close calls. Obviously someone's out for me. Like, I'm done. And mom gets upset with her and is like, I don't want you to have the life that I had. I want you to get out of this town, all of that. So that encourages Amber to stay.
And her mom was in pageants too. Didn't she lose to Gladys?
Yes.
So they're trying to like relive their youth through their kids as well, which is psychotic. Yeah. But
because she saved the tap shoes from the fire.
She said she put it in her underwear. How?
I know. Did you anticipate the explosion?
Right. Because she said it came out of nowhere and then the explosion blew her out of, like, I just imagine her like flying through the air or something. And then we see
it would have made way more sense if Amber had the tap shoes with her, right? If they were in her she's tapping around the whole town, right? She taps at work to practice.
Right.
Why wouldn't she?
Or like mom was okay, and then she ran back in the trailer to get to the tap shoes.
Oh, also great.
Yeah. To show how much she believes in Amber and wants to live vicariously through her.
Just call this movie Swiss cheese because the plot holes are out of control.
They were. We have to ignore a lot in this movie.
There's a lot of just like, it's a movie, it's a movie, it's a movie. Yeah.
Then we go to what seems like an etiquette meeting, but then evolves into like the question and answer practice. And everyone gets like, what tree do you want to be? And everyone has all of these bonkers answers. Becky has like the very rote.
My truck is Jesus or Christianity.
My leaves will shelter people in wheelchairs or something like that.
Yes.
And then they give Amber spell every state in alphabetical order, yeah. And I would be done. Alaska, that's it. That's holy no. I would have got Alabama, Alaska, and that would have been it. When she said Arizona, it was almost a surprise to me.
But she does it. And they're she just like, it. Oh. And then we find out, so we have the owner of the hardware store is a judge, because we have not talked about one of the, like, there are so many crappy characters in this movie, but the worst is played by Will Sasso, and it is a developmentally delayed man, and he is either the son or the brother of the general store. Okay, thank you. And so he has to be around because there's no one else to watch him. But it's like during this scene, they're like, he's taking his pants off. He's doing, I'm like, just the amount of stuff this guy does. I hated it. I hated.
Like, I tried to keep ignoring it, and it just kept getting worse.
Yes.
And that scene where the girls are answering those questions, and Brittany Murphy has to answer, and you know, each girl is saying the man has no pants on. They didn't say man; they said the R word. And when she's filming, I feel like Will Sasso was just doing crazy shit on set, and. Because she is laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost maniacal. Like, yeah. I did not.
It's nuts. But when we start to meet all the judges, we learn that each judge somehow is, you could trace it back to Gladys's family. Yeah. So you already know that they've picked these three judges that are literally in their pockets, because the hardware store guy, he's like, yeah, we were able to do paint, like get a job at the furniture store, which is owned by Gladys's husband. Mm-hmm. And then the other judge, the creepy man, what was his tie-in?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
He had one. And then the woman who was very quiet, she actually worked at the furniture store herself. So like each one of them. Of course, you knew who was going to win because they were in their pocket. I was like, why isn't anybody saying anything about this?
I think nuts. At this point, Amber was just happy to participate. Like, I don't think she ever expected to win. Like, I think she knew she was deserving to win, but she didn't expect to win with Gladys being as involved as she was.
Yeah.
But now we're at dress rehearsal, and this scene where there is mention of Mexican workers, but they keep saying Mexican,
like there's
beating Becky's skirt, and then we get, when you think that's bad, and then you get a death baby mention.
Did I miss
and she
that?
Gets to go see it, and that's why she asks
Oh, the death.
Death,
I
you
thought you
said.
said, I thought you
I
said
thought she
death.
was saying death, baby.
No,
Like
she
it
was
was
saying
like a
no.
stillborn, and she was excited to.
No.
I was shocked that
She's
was in this movie, but also not shocked
no.
because of the things that
They
were in this movie.
sign
pulled
language
back.
girl, okay, good.
Was
saying that the baby was deaf,
Oh,
so she was
I.
excited, but I'm like, the baby don't know sign language
Yeah.
yet.
Like it's just crying like a
Didn't even
baby.
cross my mind. Yeah, that's an excellent. Literally, I did not even. I was like, "That's amazing. She's gonna go communicate with the baby. What a good point."
I'm just glad it's not a deaf baby.
I was like, "What deaf baby? What plot
Oh
was this?"
no!
And she
And
was
that you just
excited.
accepted it.
Yeah,
Like you were like,
because
"Yep, this is just this movie."
it fits the deaf
Where are we
baby.
going next?
I was like, "What?" I went to the bathroom once, but I thought I pressed pause.
My bad. So,
No,
yeah, they switched numbers
got it.
then, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And Amber was supposed to be number one. And shockingly, a light fixture falls on Jeanette and hits her in the head. So now she's out of the pageant. And
Was she dead or was she just hurt?
no, because later on they say she's really excited because the hit on the head made her deaf.
The
That got
fuck?
me. And they said
Yeah.
that I literally was like, ah,
Yeah.
I can't with this movie.
What
What
the
the
hell?
hell? And the way they
Oh.
played it, everyone was, oh, yeah, you don't get it.
Yeah.
I know,
You know
terrible.
what? I am thankful there's not a mention or a black person in this, because if
Fair.
this movie was going to try to offend every single marginalized group, they did it. But she
Yep.
left us alone. Thank
Yep. Let me see. Where are we now? I
thank
have to get past the death baby in my notes. Okay, so now it's the day of the pageant. They come out in their first number, and apparently the rule was you had to make a hat of what reminded you of America. And so Denise Richards has a Mount Rushmore with her like little head cut out in it. We have
That was a genius. I'm
Yeah.
just saying.
We have Kirsten Dunst just has the United States. We have a ball of yarn because someone's uncle owns the largest ball of yarn.
"I'm sorry, I didn't understand the
That was good. That's like a good example of the writing
Yes.
when it hits in this movie.
Yeah.
That was such a great, she delivered it so perfectly, and then
And
the
then the
yarn
ball
fell off
falls.
her head.
Also, did you guys notice that Amy Adams' character had the Washington Monument and she is stroking it like a
Yes.
penis?
Yeah.
So
She's like
genius.
the Washington Monument. And I'm like,
You hear her
stop.
boyfriend.
Yeah. I do appreciate like her boyfriend was ride or die for her. Like he was like,
But
that's my
also his
girl.
friends too.
There may have been, it may have been a throuple,
If
which is fine if that's
that's what they want.
your thing.
But he did love her. You're right. He had like messages. He was ride or die for her. No
Yes.
judgment whatsoever. Very healthy relationship.
Yes. And then they all go backstage, and now Amber's costume's missing for the talent portion. And she knows, like, it has to be Becky.
Right.
Like, there's no other option. So they start fighting. At one point, she's like, bring it on. And I was like, ha ha.
Foreshadow.
Yeah. And then we see, like, after that fight, and Becky's maintaining she didn't do anything with her costume, and all of the outfits have to be approved at least a week ahead of time. So even though, was it the dance instructor gives her a leotard, like a black leotard to perform in, Gladys is like, no, sorry, rules are rules. And then we get this scene with Lisa, played by Brittany Murphy, where she's like, I'm not gonna win anyway. Here, just take my outfit. It's
So
fine.
sweet.
So
That was
sweet.
so sweet.
And then we get the stepladder dance, the scene behind me.
They decided to paint them the night before or like
The
that
day
day, so
of.
they were still wet. And you know what? Honestly, I was surprised they didn't make the seats red to make
Yeah.
it like
Look.
ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, the girls get paint everywhere because of the routine. It's really silly, but Just like this movie just keeps on getting more ridiculous.
And they keep showing Amber's mom in the audience. She has a drip of morphine and she is living her best life.
That part did make me laugh. The two of them, her and her bestie in the crowd, laughing their asses off at all the people performing, laughing at Gladys. Just, I wanted to be with them in the audience because they were having the time of their lives.
And so then it's the talent portion. We get Tessa with all the different dog barks. We get
the monologue
from Soylent Green. We get Becky with "You're Just Too Good to Be True" by Frankie Valli. But she's speaking it. It felt very William Shatner-esque.
But also, this is the second movie that Allison Janney's in where they sing this song randomly. Because 10 Things I Hate About You and this one.
Oh, yeah.
So it's good just... Catch.
We get through like the first line of the song, and then she pulls out like this stuffed Jesus on a cross and starts dancing and singing with him. And apparently halfway through this scene when they were shooting it, people got offended and walked off the set and left.
When I saw this, because again, I haven't seen this movie in so long, I forgot so much
Me
of it
too.
The way I hollered when she put the Jesus arms and wrapped it around her neck and then took the cross as if she was carrying it on her back off the stage. I was like, y'all are messy. This is a mess.
Yeah. But also, this is the thing that was most offensive. Like, there's a lot of stuff. Well,
The people who were in that scene, I think, were just people extras. Who actually lived in that town.
Got it. That
so
makes
they
sense.
Weren't involved. Like, this is just real people being like, the fuck are you going to come to Minnesota and talk about Jesus? Like, this is crazy. This is blasphemy.
And have no idea. They, they were given a script.
No. Nope.
You know, it's just sit in this audience in the outfit you brought and wait for hours and now make a mockery of their religion. That's definitely, it makes sense that they would walk off.
No context whatsoever. Yeah. So, oh man.
And then we get Amber's spectacular tapping extravaganza.
Was it giving you center stage vibes, Jackie? Like the climax of it?
A little bit. It's also giving a little Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes. Yes.
With the arm flails. And then like I just kept watching the medium shots of her and then like the close-ups of her feet. I'm like, she's not dancing. Like
it wasn't even just the close-ups, there was like a full other person when she was doing the turns. I was like, all right.
They weren't trying. They were not trying to convince us that she had any tapping skills. They were just like, you know what? The Jesus scene didn't go well. Let's just get a professional in here. And
it was 100%. How I felt watching I, Tonya, because I was like, I know Margot did her best. Like, she's the type of actress I feel like would really try to learn. But there were scenes I was like, all right, now. I noticed. If it is, I'm shocked. But I felt like it was definitely a stunt double doing some of those moves.
Yes.
Let's bring it home because we're ready for judging. And of course, well, what's her name?
Amy Adams's character wins for second third place. But she thinks she won second place. Her boyfriend has to tell her third place, babe.
Then Amber wins first runner up. And Becky, of course, wins the crown. And Amber's sad, but she's like, it's expected.
Expected, like,
So the next day, we're at the parade and the dad comments that the day is as beautiful as a whore's ass. And I'm like, where are we going with this dialogue? Like,
I do love the actor, Sam McCurry. Like, he's just one of those actors. You just see him in a lot of stuff. Oh, was he in
Chandler's boss on Friends?
That's
Oh my God, you just solved that mystery for me. I could not figure out what he, and I looked him up too. I was like scrolling through his movies,
I think his name
and he's
is
been in
Dan.
everything.
Yeah. On Friends. Yeah.
Is he in House Arrest, Jackie?
I think he might be one of the parents.
I can't wait to do that movie.
I
That's
know.
one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He definitely is. He definitely is. It's like him and Mindy Sterling in this movie. They are the actors that have never-ending careers. Like they are
Yes.
in absolutely everything, ranging from Disney Channel to like hard-hitting dramas. And
Yeah.
if you look at their like list of credits compared to these, other names that we have in this, it's interesting to see like they're not famous. If you ran into them on the street, you probably would be like, "Is that someone I know?" Like a familiar face, but
Yeah.
they're like such good examples of longevity in actors' careers and really being able to make a living doing it.
Yeah.
Anytime I see Mindy Sterling in anything, I'm like, there she is. There's that girl.
She's
She's great.
so funny.
We just did
So funny.
Eurotrip and she showed up as like a nun in like one of the very last scenes. I was like, oh, there's Mindy
Right.
Sterling again.
Exactly. She must be a joy to have on set.
Yeah.
That's my best guess is people are just like, how can we work Mindy into this? Can we?
She's such a great com her comedic timing is amazing.
It really is.
Oh, it's not him. It's
No.
Christopher McDonald who's
Oh,
in House
Shooter
Arrest.
McGavin.
Yeah. But they give very similar
They do.
vibes.
Because at
Yeah.
first I was
Oh.
like, is that Shooter McGavin? I was like, no, that's Chandler's boss. And they
Yeah.
were two different
Wow.
people.
Good.
So, and then dad goes on to say that he had the swan float made special, or mom wanted him to have the swan float made special. So he had contacts down in Mexico to that built it. And some other racist jokes about Mexico sprinkled in for good measure, I guess. And then Becky does not want to get on the float because she's like, it smells like gasoline. I don't want to get up there. Mom makes her and then lights these like it's like the inner part of the flowers are made are like sparklers. And so mom goes and starts lighting them. I'm like, a float
She
is made of
just
tissue
said,
paper.
and she just said she smelled
Yeah.
gasoline.
And
Doesn't
so, of
end well.
course, the float explodes. But I love right before the float explodes, Amber and Amy Adams' character are in like a convertible behind the swan float. And I love how Amber's like, we'll just sit here choking on swan gas. And then, like, the swan just explodes. And Gladys is not really even upset. Like, she's upset about her daughter, but in the way of like,
They're
now.
supposed to go to state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That, like, my daughter just exploded.
I
Right.
just killed my daughter because
Yeah.
I lit
Right.
and I did all these things. I was always confused because I thought for some reason that it was on purpose and it was meant to kill Amber because
Right.
later on she goes and says, "Hey, Amber, that it was you should have been dead." And I'm just like, "Wait, this is not adding up."
Very
Like,
confusing.
I think
Yeah,
it
I
was
agree.
the double one. Like she was expecting Amber to be home.
And so when they arrest her because she's admitted to killing.
Everyone.
Yeah. Jesus.
She
Like,
starts talking about Tammy and
oh, and the
yeah.
spotlight, because she also rigged the
Oh,
spotlight to fall, but
yeah.
it hit Jeanette instead because they swapped.
I was surprised. I actually thought it was Denise Richards' character the whole time. I'm not
Yeah.
sure why. I just assumed that. And so that was a bit of I when they finished the pageant, I said to myself, great job. Done. Movie's over.
Yeah.
I really did not even remember this whole second kind of finisher. But I
Yeah.
will say, like, one of my all-time favorite parts of this whole movie was when the camera crews hated each other because they kept talking about, are you guys the camera crew from Cops? And
Yes.
no, they're not. It's like a running joke. And then when the camera crew for Cops comes in with the cops and they meet the documentary filmmakers and they all know each other,
Yeah.
that to me takes the cake for this whole movie. Like, that
Yes.
was the most hilarious, natural, and it's exactly what filmmakers would do. They would know
Yeah.
each other. They're like the only two camera crews in like Minnesota or something, and they all hang out at like the same, local bar or something. So that made me, I was like, okay, I'm back in.
Yeah, like I totally felt like, okay, Amber gets to be crowned, the end. But then we have this whole extra scene, and all of this is fit in like 15 minutes at the end of the movie, where
Yes.
it's she goes to regionals And she doesn't eat shellfish, but everyone else does, and everyone else gets sick. And so she, by default, goes to state.
Yes.
And the quote she said is, her mom says, don't eat anything that carries its home with it.
I love that. It's good. I believe that. I support that advice.
And then, I love me some crab legs.
I know.
It's hard.
Crawfish.
And then they go to the big show, the big one.
And they all show up, and the pageant shut down for tax evasion, and it's canceled. And essentially, that's the end of this particular pageant. And so all the other contestants, all the other states start rioting. They're like knocking stuff over, breaking windows. And poor Amber, she's just like nothing good can ever go my way. So she just kind of dejectedly goes back on the bus to go home. And then, so you're like, okay, conclusion, yay. And then we get a like follow-up of Amy Adams' character is missing in the Philippines because she was stripping to put herself through like school or something.
Cosmetic school or something. Yeah.
Like this bizarre back like story. Right. And then we get Gladys escapes from prison and becomes a sniper and is like a hostage situation for like 6 hours. And then she shoots the news reporter, and Amber's standing right there. So she picks up the mic and is like reporting on what's going on. And then she becomes a news anchor because of this, like her idol, Diane Sawyer. And that's the end of the movie.
Oh, Lord, we made it. We made it. There's so many twists and turns at the end.
Oh, man.
The film's original ending had Gladys commit suicide in prison. Wow. And the sniper ended up being the town librarian / former Mount Rose American teen princess, Iona Hildebrandt, who I think we see clips of throughout the movie. This was changed because they had some negative feelings about it in the test screenings. So fact that that's what came back from the test screenings, everything else was fine. But that was the
good
straw.
Point. That's a solid.
That's what we took away. It was probably because it was so fresh in their memory, because it was like the last 3 minutes of the movie. Like, well, we did it, y'all. The movie was originally titled Dairy Queens, but was changed for legal reasons. I wonder what those legal reasons were.
Dairy Queen actually was like, we will sue you. We are not playing. So remember I talked about the drama with Kirstie Alley? Mm-hmm. Well, according to the director, Michael Patrick Jan, he said that Kirstie refused to try on many of the costumes the wardrobe department had picked for Gladys, instead asking for them to be sent to the Scientology Celebrity Center in Hollywood to try them on there.
Sounds about right.
I don't know. Part of me doesn't believe Michael Patrick. Part of me does. Part of me sees that could be, it makes a lot of sense.
A real thing, yeah.
I cannot believe Allison Janney was not invited to the premiere. I would say she was probably lucky, but still, it's Allison Janney. How can you not?
She said it was because she didn't make it onto the poster. And if you're not on the poster, you're not going to the premiere. And she said they probably, like anybody who went to the premiere, they had to pay for that person to go. So they were just trying to pay less. That's big mistake.
Allison Janney also said she is recognized by fans for this movie more than anything else in her career. I don't know how she's not recognized for 10 Things I Hate About You more.
Well, I mean, this one, I think she was in it more. I think people, it's one of those blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
Plus 10 Things I Hate About You had so many people in it. I don't know if like, again, she's only in it a little bit, but yeah. Anywho, so Carrie, before we go into ratings and really wrap this up, your social handles, tell it to us.
Love it. Yep. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Carrie Francis Official, and of course, carriefrancis.com.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Threads at No More Late Fees. And Carrie, now that your adult self has rewatched this movie, what would your rating be?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think that my adult self would probably, I was going to say 2-day rental, and I have to, I think, say same day rental. Like, I think this is a great movie to watch on an afternoon where you're at home cleaning, maybe doing some other stuff, watching a whole bunch of movies, or you just want something a little quirkier. It would be like part of a great movie marathon with like Best in Show or Sugar and Spice, right? Or any of those kind of quirkier late 90s, early 2000 movies. But I would say if I don't see this movie again, I'm cool. Yes. I'm okay with that.
Jackie?
Never have I ever doing this podcast and like 150 movies and had such a visceral reaction to a movie. Like, I was just like, I hate this movie. I don't want to be watching it anymore. And I know it's someone's like story and I hate like that, but it just, the characterization, and on top of it, I don't like spoofs, and I feel like mockumentaries fall into that category for me. Yeah. So it is a same day rental. I'm glad we have done it and it's over.
Same day rental. Yeah. I'm probably not watching this again.
Yeah.
I know younger self loved it. I know so many people love this movie. I just wonder, have they watched it recently? Have you watched it recently? Still love this movie?
I was texting with my friends whilst watching it, and one of my friends who watches it pretty frequently, she's like, oh, I love that movie. And I'm just like, cool. There's something for everyone, I guess.
It's the nostalgia, though. See, like, because I only watched this maybe once or twice ever, and just at the time thought it was really funny, so it just kind of laid in my head in that way. Yeah, like, and the cast.
It's not any commentary on the cast or their acting in it. Like, they all did great. It was just, it was over the top. It was caricaturization of all of these different groups of people. It was just,
honestly, just didn't age well for me. That's my biggest thing. Like, I love supporting a female writer. It's a majority female cast. There's things I can take positively from it, but there was just too many cringeworthy moments, too many Swiss cheese plot holes.
If you have a different opinion on on this movie and want to share that with us, hit us up at our quick drop 909-601-NMLF, 909-601-6653. Twat us at the Twitters, hem us at the Threads, and you can be featured on a future episode. And we also have a birthday shout out. It is our good pal, Amber, who has been on a couple of episodes. Happy birthday. We love you so much. Thank you for supporting us and listening to us and providing feedback and suggestions. And can't wait to see you eventually on Malibu's Most Wanted.
Happy birthday. I can't wait for Malibu's Most Wanted one day, too. And join us next week as we cover the 1999 indie cult classic Go. And don't forget to come back for our bonus episode with Carrie as we play games and make her an honorary Blockbuster employee.
Carrie, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. It was such a blast. And you are welcome back anytime. Suggest a movie next time while you were sleeping. We will put you down for while you were sleeping.
Oh, to make up for this. If you have not done that yet, let me stake my claim and we can lose our minds over that movie together. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Next time we'll do a movie where it's not the conceptual idea of the movie that we all love, but the movie that we all love. That's what we take away from Drop Dead Gorgeous together. It's not not what was, it's what is. But thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Absolutely. And as always, be kind and rewind.